you're never going to be truly creative, fully creative without a little piece of technical, and you're never going to be fully technical without a little piece of creative. So just appreciate that, you know, the yin and yang of that situation and how they play off each other. And that's how you're going to kind of optimize to be your best, is utilize them both when you need it.
Hey there. Welcome to Lessons in Creativity, where we'll explore the creative process across different disciplines and learn how to harness this natural part of our human experience. I'm Jenna Massey, your fellow student and host. In this episode, I spoke with Kara Sullivan, a biomedical engineer who works at a medical device company. In our conversation, Kara spoke about the myths relating to creativity and engineering, the balance between practicality and creativity, and the importance of diversity of thought in an innovative environment. Kara's also really fun to talk to, which you'll soon see. Here we go with Kara.
Welcome, Kara Sullivan. Thank you so much for being here on the podcast.
Of course.
And for being one of the very first guests.
I'm honored.
Yes. So today we're going to dive into the topic of creativity within the engineering field. So I want to start by bringing you back to childhood and think about Kara as a 7, 8, 9-year-old. In what ways did creativity come out?
I guess at that age and you know, kind of like even earlier than that, I was always kind of looking to make something. I like remember for years and years, like I was going to art classes. I asked for like paints. I asked for an easel that's still in my parents' house that I haven't touched in 30 years. But I was always trying to make something. And one of my like favorite Christmas presents was those like art kits that like you would unsnap them and they had like all the spaces for the markers and the crayons and the watercolors. And I would get a new one every year because I would like wear it out with all of my creations and, you know, Legos and Play-Doh and model magic and all of those things were just kind of a huge part of keeping me entertained and out of trouble, really. But also it was about kind of taking what I was visualizing in my head and kind of bringing it into a physical form. So I was always kind of doing something creative when I was a kid.
The early building inclinations, it seems.
Yeah, definitely. And probably the person who saw that more than anyone was my mother. She was actually the first person to kind of point out to me that like maybe I had a future in engineering. And I remember very much like resenting it. Like, I'm not like a nerd. Like, I'm too cool for engineering school.
You didn't know yourself.
No, I didn't. But I mean, right? Your mother knows you better than anybody, right? So, I would say, you know, my mom came from a technical field, and I think she saw kind of this burst of creativity and, you know, kind of recognized what they could be. She's largely the reason why we're here today.
So how did you wind up doing the biomedical engineering field?
Yeah. So, kind of around the age that I started looking at colleges and stuff, my sister, who was a few years older, actually pointed out, an article in the like Science Times to me or something like, you know, one of those publications. And it was actually saying that there was like a huge success rate of people who had very, very technical degrees, like this new biomedical engineering degree. It's a little bit newer in the realm of engineering. Mm-hmm. And like very like tactile, like fine arts degrees. So people who also were like, you know, clarinet players or people who were, you know, art, had a minor in art, those kind of overlap of the very technical and the very, very traditionally artistic, actually had a very high success rate, not only within getting into medical school, but, you know, after medical school being surgeons, because it proves kind of that like technical thinking.
Wow.
But also like very high dexterity. So it's something that's like, you know, kind of an area that they were expecting a lot of people who were surgical candidates to go in. And it was kind of on my radar because of that. And, you know, I was considering it. And then maybe a few months later, I was at a wedding in Florida and my 80-year-old grandmother fell on the dance floor to the electric slide and broke her hip. And she, you know, within a few days, almost like an extended weekend, was, you know, injured, into surgery, fixed, up and moving, and on her way back to New York where she's from. And I just thought it was so incredible that you could take something that is so purely natural, like the human body, and kind of almost have the hubris to sit down and try to fix it with synthetic materials, and to have the know-how to do that, you know, to me was just kind of amazing. And I think that was kind of when the bug for biomedical really kind of struck me and kind of led me to the field that I'm in today.
Wow. I love that story. It's so cool. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So then thinking about like the topic of creativity and engineering, I think there's sometimes a myth that engineers are not creative and that they're only science and math people. How do you think about that?
Honestly, I would say people probably agree. Like when, even myself, like if I hear somebody is an engineer, my first thought is like, well, they're good at math and science.
Mm-hmm.
And I am one, which is crazy. But no, I think that's kind of where people are going to default because that's so like front heavy in your experience becoming an engineer having gone to engineering school. Like it is a lot of that. But later on, as you get more into the engineering piece of it and less into the, you know, classing piece of it, once you start getting real world experience or you do internships or co-ops or you do your first design project, you mm-hmm. know, when you're a junior or a senior in college, you kind of start to have to flex those muscles to think about things differently. So towards the tail end, after you're kind of like bruised and beaten from engineering school, they kind of start saying like, okay, well, go ahead, open up your mind and start thinking about things differently. And, you know, it's you're going to lead with the science and the math, but you have to get through that stuff in order to kind of allow yourself that freedom of thought, which is, you know, kind of really what engineering school is. So definitely I would consider myself somebody who maybe has had similar thoughts in the past. I actually took an art class in college because I was worried about that towards Ooh. The tail end. So yeah, I would say, you know, having done the job for a few years in and of itself, it's creative, but, I don't, you know, blame anybody for thinking upfront, maybe it's not creative. There's a lot of not creative stuff you have to do to get there.
Well, I think you're making me think of like in like songwriting and like creative works like that. A lot of it is like learn the rules and master the rules so you know how and when you can break them
totally.
Or challenge them.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of that applies with engineering as well. Obviously, there's a lot of rules you cannot break.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But
definitely.
You have to, you really have to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, a lot of engineers do have to work in regulated industries and very heavily regulated industries. So you're almost being forced to have innovative thoughts and kind of trying to put something together that's truly innovative and different. And, you know, every engineer wants to, you know, make a difference. So something that's going to make a difference, but you have to do it under this kind of like oppressive system of rules and kind of scaffolding. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah. Learning the rules, or I had a professor put it once, of finding out where the dots are so that you can connect them differently was really about creativity in engineering. So I was lucky enough to come out of school with that mindset, and it gets proven every single day to me with the assignments that I'm asked to complete.
I love it. Okay. So let's dive into those assignments.
Let's talk about them.
How do you notice that you get new ideas?
I would say a lot of it is really just kind of like understanding what the problem I'm being asked to solve is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doing research into what's been done before, why things have or haven't worked. But, you know, really kind of just understanding like the specific needs ahead of you. So it kind of going back to like almost grade school science, which I think everyone has experience with. When you're learning in like your fifth or sixth grade class about the scientific method and forming a hypothesis, that's something that, you know, you kind of do every day.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of a sharpening of that skill is what we would call the design process on my side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at that design process is kind of identifying the specific like user needs. Like what does your user, what does your product, what does your customer need?
Mm-hmm.
And taking those kind of basic requirements and turning them into something tangible and turning them into a product that combines all of these functionalities in the way that you're expecting, right? So kind of looking at that scientific method and that design process, like to a degree, engineers are all kind of cheating because we're getting told how to solve problems well. It just becomes more or less, are you solving them well differently from somebody else? Or have you considered something maybe that we haven't thought of before? And I think that's where the creativity really kind of comes in to my day-to-day at least.
Mm-hmm. Very. Okay. So you kind of introduced this design process that you yes. mentioned. Can you walk us through, like, in your work as a biomedical engineer, what does it look like to develop a product, like, from start to finish?
Yeah. So I'm curious. I'm lucky. I've actually seen, like, every piece of the life cycle just within, like, all of my
wow.
experience, which is, you know, kind of, it's, you know, kind of cool. So typically what would happen is you'd have, like, we'd call them a customer, we'll say. We'll keep it, like, general. So you'd have a customer come in and say, like, I need this. And the customer could be your sales force. It could be, you know, an airline company. It's whoever your customer is, right? Whoever needs you to make this product. And they'll turn to you and they'll say, we need this. We need a plane. We need a car, whatever it ends up being. And they'll give you some ideas of what they need you to do. Like, I need it, a car. I need it to have four wheels. I need it to have an engine. I need it to seat, you know, five people comfortably. I need it to run on gasoline. Does it run on diesel? Does it run on, right? Like,
right.
You kind of start to figure out, like, what information they're giving you. Mm-hmm. And based on the constraints, we'll call them, mm-hmm. what the information that they're giving you, what they absolutely need, they're going to kind of constrain your creative process and your true innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll say, like, oh, okay, like, what they're asking for is a, you know, four-cylinder engine car. It's got four wheels. It's got four doors. It seats five people, maybe not so comfortably, but it should sit five. We've got some trunk space, you know, it's got an engine. You can fill it up in any gas station. You'll kind of, you know, they give you an idea of, like, what, you know, scaffolding you have. Mm-hmm. You start to get the framework of what your product's going to be. Then from there, you know, you might try a few different things. You might say, like, okay, well, four wheels and four doors, I can make a boat with four wheels. Like, right, maybe that would work for the problem. Maybe that's what I want to do. And then you'll say, like, nah, actually, that doesn't, you know, I can't get, like, you know, the doors to work on it, because every time I open the door, there's water. Okay, well, let's think about it more as land-based. And you kind of start to try out options. Mm-hmm. And through the trial and error of those options kind of weighed against what your original intention was, you kind of start to get the idea of what you need to do.
So your client comes in and says, this is what I need. You're probing them and asking questions and kind of backing them up.
Yeah.
Really to say, is that really what you need? Or is it really?
Yeah. Sometimes it's that. And sometimes you start out and you have, like, a really idealized version of what you want. And like the phrase I used before was, like, pie in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have this, like, ideal, in a perfect world, this is what it would be. And every client, every customer is going to want that.
Mm-hmm.
But within what materials you can use, within right. how long it takes to make, within where you're looking to sell this, within, you know, kind of what the market need is, because you can make all of these products, but if nobody wants them, if you don't have consumers, then, you know, it's kind of empty.
Yeah.
So within all of those constraints, you kind of start bringing that pie in the sky idea back down to reality and back down to earth almost. So a lot of the design process is iterations and kind of starting with, again, that ideal version or that kind of rough idea.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing it back down to what's feasible, what's practical, and then what's, you know, later on in the process, cost effective, what's maybe taking market share from a competitor,
mm-hmm.
what's going to be launched in time for Christmas. You know, it's all different things. But from the beginning to end, it's almost like a giant funnel. It starts so, so big, and it just kind of keeps getting whittled down to less and less and less. Until you're kind of left with the one option or maybe a handful of options that really fit the need of what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And you take, you know, that product that you're kind of left with and you look back at what your original intention was, and you're going to go back and check, does this fulfill the need of what the customer asked? Does this fulfill the need of everything else that has happened along the way? Does this fulfill the need of the regulatory bodies that we're working with? And your creativity comes within kind of hitting those walls in the maze and turning around and finding an alternative route or turning around and going back the way you came and going in a different direction maybe. And that's really where your creativity is going to come in.
Yeah. So it's not always a linear plan.
Never, never. That's a Sheryl Sandberg quote, I think, is and lean in. Like thinking about your career and stuff is like a ladder and like more or less think about it as a jungle gym. And that's really the design process is you're not constantly making forward progress, but you're going to get to the top of the jungle gym, right? So you might have to make a lateral step here or a lateral step there. You might have to go down to go back up, but you will make it to the jungle gym. And thinking about design as almost a 3D shape, I think helps a little bit because not every failure is a failure. Sometimes it's a learning opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe one of the heartbreaks of the job is a really good idea and then it doesn't serve the purpose. You got to kind of abandon it. So there's a lot of almost starting and stopping, which I think is true of any creative process.
That's so interesting. Yeah, for sure. What about like accidental discoveries?
Oh, that happens a lot. It happens a lot that you accidentally find something or you accidentally see that something like correlates. But there's not typically, right, to go back to the science piece of it, there's not typically coincidences. And I think that creativity of recognizing similarities or recognizing that flash of almost like genius, to quote an alum from my school, there's a movie on a guy from my engineering school. It's called Flash of Genius.
Oh.
It's great. You should watch it. It's a good movie.
I will.
But that flash of genius and recognizing like that opportunity, I think happens a lot. And sometimes it doesn't always pan out, but it's that glimmer of hope that kind of like, okay, we have an option or we have a different direction we can go in or time isn't lost because we, you know, found something that works. Like that happens a lot for us. And it's kind of cool because like, I think when you're thinking big picture, you're like, well, I haven't solved the problem or I haven't done this. But like little scale, it's knowledge that you now have. It's something that you've seen that you really can't unsee. Yeah. So you don't know when that information is going to come in to handy play. Later on. And I think that's like, you know, I was saying to somebody the other day, I had a situation where I was looking at something and somebody asked me a question and like drop of the hat, I was able to kind of say something. And they were like, thanks, I needed that, right, blah, blah, blah. We went on with our day. And somebody came back to me later and was like, how do you know that? And I was like, I got confused about something else. I had to like do research on this. So now I know that that's the situation. And it was kind of cool because like, I was like, oh man, like I was just kind of, you know, futzing around learning something new. And I was like, put it in my back pocket for later, put it, another tool in my tool belt, right, so to speak. And then, you know, kind of when I was least expecting it, kind of saved us a little bit of time in the long run. And literally happened this morning. It was crazy.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I think it's – I had a professor once that talked about like also needing to be open and and have presence to like realize when these discoveries are being made.
Yeah.
Because like you could create something that's like not for the goal that you're creating and just be like, oh, well, that's nothing because it's not – achieving the goal, but kind of recognizing like, wait, that is something I don't know what it's for now, but like maybe later, like your example from this morning.
Yeah. And it's kind of like my professor once, you know, said like connecting the dots in a different way. Like it almost like just as much as like, right, you're talking about that particular instance of, you know, you have to be open. Like if you're open, you see all of the dots and we're all talking about it. And there's, again, like a humility to like, this is my dot. Maybe it's not working, but like, this is where my dot is right now. Somebody else might walk in, look at your dot and know that it's going to be helpful for somebody else. And I think like a huge part of that, like teamwork
that's a really
and crowdsourcing and knowledge sharing, like that's a big piece of it.
Huge.
Right. It's the common goal is accomplishing something. In general, I would say, you know, if you see the opportunity to connect two things, sometimes the hardest part is just speaking up about that. But that's where I think a huge initiative for a lot of corporations has been like diversity of thought and getting people with varied backgrounds and education.
You're jumping right into my next question.
Oh my
God. No, I think because everything you're talking about really speaks to like what are the conditions within a company that makes innovation possible and, and you know, kind of sets the stage for it. So you were speaking a little bit about, like, you talked a lot about like collaboration and openness, mm-hmm. and like sharing openness of thought and discoveries.
Yeah.
And you're starting to go into diversity of thought, yeah. which I'm really curious to hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah. So I think working for a massive corporation in a traditionally technical role, you don't expect that. And I think it has to be something that people are a little bit more deliberate with in terms of trying to, you know, move the needle. Mm-hmm. So if you work for a company that is, you know, only hiring PhDs, you're going to have PhD thought all the time. Mm-hmm. But in a room of people who are so theoretically trained, like, where is your practicality, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of, you know, one of the biggest examples I can give. And vice versa, if people are sitting here and they're super practical, I have this problem right now, and this is the issue, to not have somebody theoretical who can kind of take a step back, do that bird's eye view, you're always going to be chasing that immediate problem and not maybe looking at a more systemic fix. So you do need that diversity of thought. And I think it's just about kind of looking for the differences in the experiences to understand how to create kind of a diverse thought. One thing that I'm particularly passionate about, I'm sure we'll chat about later, is young women, mm-hmm. in STEM fields and young women in engineering. So coming up through engineering school in the late 2000s and into the 2010s, there was a higher number of women, I would say, in again, traditionally technical fields, and more so than probably when my sweet mother was doing it in the late 70s and early 80s. But you know, it's still kind of, we're not a majority, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we're chasing 50-50. We're getting close. And some schools, the university I was lucky enough to go to and the company I'm lucky enough to work for are both places very much dedicated and committed to making women comfortable in STEM fields. But you actually have, like, I think at its core, the basis of it, is that, like, you know, women want equity and they want equality in STEM fields, and they want to feel comfortable going into a classroom and they don't want to feel outnumbered. And for whatever, you know, reason, we're currently saying women aren't pursuing STEM fields, I actually think is a little bit wrong. I think that, you know, you're kind of taking away the essence of the female engineer is she's a little bit gritty. Mm. She's a hard worker. Yeah. She doesn't take no for an answer. She has to be creative because maybe things don't come to her as easily as they do her male counterparts in the classroom. She's determined, and that girl has a different skill set than a guy who maybe always succeeded in math and science and, you know, was expected to go into engineering and, you know, kind of is part of the boys club and can go like golfing on summer Fridays. Like, wow. You know, you're kind of having a different skill set with those women who are kind of, you know, in the same realm and in the same arena. And I think trying to go for equality is like a little silly because female engineers are innately better at things like communicating. They're innately better at things like writing. Yeah. It's actually a skill set that women, you know, have that a lot of the technical men do not. They're better at communicating. They're a little bit more deliberate with, you know, how they communicate and interact with others. And when you look at the maybe not so great stereotypes of men in the field, they're, you know, in technical fields, at least, they're brash, they can't talk, they can't communicate, they're impatient, they're awkward. How many times is it like they're awkward? Like, you're not normally seeing that with female engineers, I think.
We're not.
Any woman in STEM, because you almost don't have that luxury. Like, you have to adapt. Mm. And that actually gives you a skill set that makes you, I don't remember the study, I can send it to you, but studies show that actually women are in general more creative engineers than men. And I think all of those conditions are what contribute to
Interesting.
That. Coming at it just from like a male-female engineer point of view, you have, you know, like a clear benefit to having women in engineering fields.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier of like, where do you get your ideas? And it really is drawing on all the experiences and the research that you've come into contact with. And so if you can expand your surface area of that by, you know, adding people with ultimately extremely different backgrounds.
Everyone's got experiences. So like, why not put them to use, you know?
Yeah. All right. Send all the female engineers to Kara.
Every girl. Come on over.
Okay. So let's talk about getting into flow state.
Okay.
So flow state, oftentimes, you know, your parts of your brain are deactivated because mm-hmm. you're engaging the more like creative parts. So your prefrontal cortex is like shut down a little bit. So sometimes there's like coming from the corporate innovation world, like there were sometimes certain little activities or exercises that we would do to like intentionally put people into flow state or help people engage in flow state. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like, what does flow state look like for you and how do you get into it?
I do have to say I'm lucky enough to work on a team. I've been on this team for years now. And that means that I hold a lot of almost tribal knowledge. So it is super hard for me to get into that flow state where I'm uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. I purposefully, like when I picked my seat, picked a seat with my back to like the thoroughfare so that like if people walk in, like I'm not getting distracted by every passing face or whatever. You know, it allows me to really kind of like hone in and focus. I typically like tell people like, hey, like I'm, you know, like leave me alone. I find that helps. Sometimes I put on, and everybody who listens to this, who knows me is going to just be like, yes, I know this about her. Like I put on one song and one song only, and I put it on super loud, like on my Spotify with my like little like noise canceling headphones in the office. And I put it up on my screen as like a warning, like she's busy. She's in,
is that
in
song
state.
Like repeating or
yeah,
just when
it's
you're getting
one
into
song
the
repeat? And you can tell how bad my year is by if it's my number one song on my Spotify Wrapped or not. And that song is a million off of the Carter 3 album. And I think that's what I need to kind of get into that flow state is exactly what you said. Like I need to kind of like tune everything out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like just trying to tackle something that I've been, you know, trying to like fix and like it's a 30-minute thing. I just need to sit down and do it.
Yeah.
But a huge part of it is just kind of like getting all of those outside distractions, like completely, mm-hmm. you know, out of my way. And I will sit down and I will write a to-do list. Mm-hmm. And I will write down the list of like, what am I specifically trying to accomplish? And my general rule of thumb, it's no more than like 5 things mm-hmm. because like that I can cycle through mentally. These are the things I need to do. And that's digestible.
Yeah.
So a huge part of it is not trying to stay in the flow state until everything is done, but until that digestible bite and piece of it is done. Mm-hmm. And just trying to go in with the focus of what are you actually trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
Because then it kind of keeps me on task of like what I'm trying to do. But the thing that's kind of crazy about that is, and I feel like everyone's probably experienced this, when you're focusing on one thing, other things start to pop up and other things start to like, and you almost like can't shake those things. Uh-huh. So what I've actually found is that like doing something repetitive, doing something where I'm like so focused on it has actually like quieted a concern of something different in my mind and allows me to like be like, oh, wait a minute. Actually, I think I just solved that. And that like was, I've always been that way. You remember this back in the day, swimming in high school, you do the 500, you're in the middle of 20 laps, high school girl swimming.
Yep.
You know,
the two 500 girls right here.
The two girls swimming the 500, right? You hit the wall. And I don't know if you remember it, but more often than not, I'd get up and I'd run to the locker room. I would figure something out for like AP Chem homework. I would figure like right. Like
flashes of insight come to you because your mind is
you're on
calm.
Autopilot.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's it. It's like, right, putting on the loud music, telling everybody to like buzz off and leave me alone allows me to go into autopilot where everything is just kind of like, you know, peripheral to like my thoughts. And more often than not, quieting everything else allows something else to pop in. So it's kind of funny because there were days where I was like sitting there focusing on a document. Lil Wayne is like still rapping in my ear. And I'd be like, oh my God, I figured this out. This is what I need to say, or this is what I need to do. And it would take everything in my power to like stop. So what I'd do is I'd actually create like another list, and it would be all the things that I figured out while I was like sitting there thinking. So I have two lists. I always have two lists.
That's incredible.
If you want to see my notebooks, they're covered in like multiple lists. Like just like, this is what I need to do. This is what I figured out. Like
that's amazing. Yeah. But that makes a lot of sense because in the flow state, you're your prefrontal cortex is quieted, your creative parts are activated, so you're more able to make connections.
Exactly.
And yeah. You're brilliantly writing them down.
That's
which I love.
Part.
But it's but thoughts, right? You know what? It's like, no, literally it is. So I think it was Einstein. He used to literally tie his finger to a string that like a brick that was had a he had like a bucket of water and then he would fall asleep. And then as soon as he would fall all the way asleep, he would get like jolted back awake because his like hand would fall into the bucket and wake him up because that's how he would get his ideas. So you're basically Einstein is what I'm saying.
Well, look at that. Thank you. Appreciate that. Wow.
No, I love that, Kara. That was such a great, I love that.
It's, awesome. I had to think about that long and hard, like in my day to day, like.
That's a fascinating process that you've carved out for yourself.
That's
incredible. I love it. Okay. So this is a question from our listeners.
Got it.
It's me at this
point. what do you want to know?
As you know, and you talked about this actually, even back to your science article that your sister found for you. It's like two parts of the brain, your left and right part. And you have honed both of these. Do you feel like they're ever in conflict? You're either in structured thinking, like logical or creative thinking. And if so, how do you kind of bridge the gap or try to like combine them?
I mean, sometimes I don't have the luxury of conflict, but there have been a few times in my career where I think that like what I've, maybe the better way to put it is what I creatively wanted to do didn't necessarily mesh with what made the most sense for like my task at hand. And that's almost like that's my left brain, right brain, right? Like, cause like you do all this school, you do all this training, you get all this context and then you're like, I want to go out and I want to change the world. I want to make the best products I possibly can. And, you know, I want to do as much as I can do. And some people get to do that every single day. And that's awesome. I have to work again within a little bit more of a scaffolding, a little bit more of a confined space. And I remember one time, it was probably like mid-career. And I came up with a design that we had this issue where we were seeing that like, under certain forces, we were having something. We had like a condition where it was like under certain forces, the device wasn't operating necessarily quite as it should be. And I was tasked with the idea of, or tasked with the, you know, goal of like, fix it. We don't want to see this again. And I came up with two or three concepts, probably like two good ones, one really good one. So I put together this proposal. I looked at maybe like, you know, four, let's say five concepts tops. And I was kind of like, this is what I'm thinking. And these are the, you know, two or three that are really honing in on, I'm going to hone in on. And I was like, this is the one I'm most excited about. So it was kind of a concept of take the force and find a way to reverse it. So I came up with a way to do this. I was so jacked. I was like, this is it. You're never going to see this again. You're welcome. I'm like, I'll expect my bonus in the mail. Like, I was so excited. And I sat down and my very practical, you know, boss's boss at the time kind of turned to me and was like, I love it. I get it. But like, do you think that's best for this? And I was like, you tasked me with fixing the problem, but now you're asking me what's going to be the most cost effective or what's going to be the easiest to produce or what's going to be the best thing for the company. And I was like, but you asked me to fix it. I fixed the problem. This is the best way to fix the problem. And creatively, I really believe that that was going to be the best solution. But practically, right? So right brain versus left brain. Create. And like, it was like one of my first like, big girl heartbreaks in corporate America.
Yeah.
Was like
having to let go of your baby.
Yeah. My creative process. And it really was difficult. But what I decided I was going to do was I had to commit to the idea that the company, the direction in the company that the company wanted to go in. And I thought about it. And I actually thought I could make that proposal even better. And I actually thought about like another way to improve it. So like I said, okay, my perfectly creative solution is maybe not practical, but now within the realm of practicality, I can be more creative with this. So I got a little bit of my creative fix with it. But I think that that's kind of, you know, the job that you have to do is it's not always going to be completely left brain or completely right brain. you have to balance the two. And sometimes it's a little bit more right brain than left brain. Sometimes it's a little bit more left brain than right brain. But we did move forward with the practical solution, and I got to get a little bit of creativity in there to help, I'm going to say, bolster or, you know, kind of the situation that we had. But that was kind of, again, I would say probably like the biggest conflict of what I wanted to truly do creatively versus what was maybe more practical and logical. And what I decided to do was say, like, even though this is on the more practical side of the spectrum, I was still going to try to put my creative flair on it.
That's such a great compromise. And I think I love your point of, you don't always have the luxury of conflict.
Nah, never.
That's such a great way to think about
it. No, it's true. Like, sometimes you it can't just be like, it's just not binary. Like, it's not, you know, black and white. It has to be a little bit more of like a spectrum. It has to be a little bit more of a gray area. And there are different shades of gray, right? You have to understand that behind every left brain idea, there's a little bit of right brain. And behind every right brain idea, there's a little bit of left brain. And nobody is truly 50-50 or 100%, but you're somewhere in the middle, and you're always going to have the input of one side with the other. And once you embrace that, like,
pulling like even a little bit of creativity into practicality. Wow. I'm learning a lot here. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Well, Kara, thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot. And is there anything, any last thoughts, like anything that you want to leave our listeners with in the realm of creativity and engineering that we didn't cover already?
I mean, honestly, it's, if you had told me engineering was creative, you know, 15 years ago when I set out to be an engineer and I started my career really with going to engineering school, I probably would have laughed at you, because what was in front of me at that point in time was so truly technical. And like, I don't think I appreciated the opportunity that I was going to get from a creative space with. And I think that applies to everything and every job and everything you do. Is nothing's going to be completely technical or completely creative. Playing an instrument, there's a huge technical aspect to
that's
that.
That's true.
Singing, there's a huge technical piece of harmonies.
Yeah.
In engineering, there's a huge creative piece to, you know, if you're doing manual drawing or drafting or just being able to look at any shape that exists in the world and understanding. And it's just, it's never going to be one without the other. They're always going to kind of intermingle. And sometimes you have to kind of favor one over the other, but it's, each of them is never going to be truly absent. So, like, I guess maybe full takeaway is, if you're thinking about doing something technical, or if you are doing something technical and you feel like you're missing a creative outlet, like, take that like bird's eye view, look at what you're doing in your world, and almost appreciate the little sparks and the little blips of creativity in what you're doing, because a lot of it is, you know, kind of your disposition. And I would just say that once I started thinking about that, and I was like, man, like, I get to make new stuff every day, and it might not be a brand new product, but it is a new solution to an age old problem. I was like, man, this is, you know, I felt fulfilled immediately. So like, you're never going to be truly creative, fully creative, without a little piece of technical, and you're never going to be fully technical without a little piece of creative. So just appreciate that, you know, the yin and yang of that situation and how they play off each other. And that's how you're going to kind of optimize to be your best, is utilize them both when you need it.
Love it. Thank you so much, Kara.
Thank you for having me.
Yay.
Hope you enjoyed my episode with Kara Sullivan. Let me know what you thought of it and what lessons you took away by leaving a comment on the Lessons in Creativity Instagram page. Thanks so much, and stay tuned for more lessons.